Progress.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Your Money Your Life podcast. I am your host, and we are now on episode 221 of the podcast, episode 221. A lot to get into, but before we get into it, make sure you like, subscribe, 5-star rate and review podcast wherever you're listening, watching. We want to make sure you do that and share this podcast with someone you know. A lot to get into. So let's dive right into it. I want to make sure we dive into it correctly. And we're first going to start with our news update and really dive into what's the big items that are going on in the markets and the news. So let's dive into that first and foremost. So right now, before the market opens, if you're listening to it, the market's already open, but the indications on the open are that we're going to have a rather rough opening. Big part of that is because the US gross domestic product numbers came out and they were 1.6% in the first quarter. So the first quarter of this year, 2024, economists polled 2.4%. So they expected a lot more growth, a lot more activity, a lot more sales, a lot more trade in the first quarter. And it was a lot less than expected. So with that downbeat growth rate for the quarter, consumer prices increasing at 3.4%, so that inflation number, people are a little bit less optimistic about what's happening in the economy. So this is raising concerns on what's really happening in the economy. A lot of people predicting an economic slowdown for a while, which never really came to fruition. And so now we're seeing a little bit of that based on the fact that the numbers came in a lot less than expected. If you look at the futures pre-market trading, S&P 500 trading downwards. And so far in the last, week, we've been flat. So this will take us below to the negative territory for the week. 6 months have been good. Year to date, it's been okay. It's been strong for the first quarter. But we're seeing a little bit of a pullback over this time frame if we do get a fruition of the trading, what the market's indicating in the beginning of the pre-trading market. So we'll see again. GDP numbers, a big part of this. In general, we're seeing earnings. Companies are showing their earnings. Meta plunged a little bit on their earnings. We saw different earnings from different companies, and it's been fairly okay for earnings, actually. A lot of companies are beating and getting stronger than expected earnings at the top and bottom line. And so we'll see what fulfills so far. Caterpillar also dropped on earnings. So a lot of companies coming out. With a little bit of information on how they fared in the first quarter of the year. Let's dive into news updates. There's actually a lot going on in the news, a lot that needs to be covered. And first and foremost, we're going to talk about, we already talked about the US economy and the growth rate, but now let's talk about a ban on non-compete. So the Federal Trade Commission voted to ban non-compete agreements. It was challenged by the court, but the court new rule goes into effect, which could take years. It could have major implications in healthcare. FTC estimates that it will lower costs as much as $194 billion in a year. Doctors and nurses would no longer be prevented from starting their own practice or taking a job nearby. So, any of those familiar with a non-compete, it pretty much says when you join a company, they'll make you, a lot of them times, they'll make you sign a non-compete, meaning that when you leave, you can't start up a similar company for a certain amount of time or steal clients from the place that you were working for a certain amount of time. They usually have a time frame attached to it. And so the Federal Trade Commission, we got to dig deeper into this rule. Are they banning total non-competes, or what does this actually mean? So they pinpoint doctors and nurses because a lot of times they'll work for a practice and they'll go and start their own practice because that's what someone want to do is they want to start their own business and have higher earnings rather than working under another business and just getting a salary. So here's a story from Delaney. She said, at 21, on the day of my college graduation, I received a sobering reminder in the form of certified mail, a non-compete agreement I had signed as an intern. This document essentially barred me from seeking employment with another software company in Wilmington, North Carolina. The recent news of the FTC's ban on such agreements fill me with optimism. Non-competes have long been a thorn in the side of job seekers, stifling mobility and limiting opportunities for growth. But now there's hope for change. That's pretty cool. I mean, I think this is great, especially if you're, but it does, there's like people that steal secrets and steal things and work for a company for a little bit and then like jump ship. Like, But there's a lot less than that. That there are people that just want to work somewhere, and then maybe they want to start their own thing, or just want to change of pace. And so, barring these non-competes, it's a sweeping change. It's really just barring all non-competes on jobs. So this is on jobs. So I don't know how it affects companies, because like company to company, that's a little different. But all non-competes, employment agreements that typically prevent workers from joining competing businesses or launching ones of their own. 26,000 public comments leading up to this vote, and they went with banning it. It'll take effect later this year. It carves out exceptions for existing non-competes that companies have given their senior executives on the grounds that their agreements are more likely to have been negotiated. So that makes sense. So like a lot of senior executives, all of them have non-competes. They can't work, be CEO of a company, then go work for another company just because they know so much intricate knowledge of the company that they worked for. That makes sense that you'd want to bar that. So this is going to be really, really interesting to see how this works and how this shakes out. We'll have to watch this closely because it's really, really kind of groundbreaking stuff. Others bans, the government was busy. They got bans, they have tax increase proposals. But TikTok, the ban went through. We've been talking about this for weeks. TikTok has to be sold in line with a bill signed Wednesday by President Joe Biden. There's a huge unknown. I think they have 9 months to a year. But people want to know how much TikTok is worth. But the ban has happened. We talked about this for a while, and it's now been signed. There's 170 million Americans on TikTok. The users will be booted from the For You page anytime. They'll be booted from the For You page, but not soon. Chinese parent ByteDance has about 9 months to sell TikTok. They have 9 months to sell a company, which they can get it done within 9 months. But that start the process now, and they have to find a buyer. And I don't think they're gonna sell. Like a lot of people don't think they will sell because the Chinese, they don't really work well with demands of the American people. So I don't think they're gonna sell. And so that means a lot of people will no longer be able to use TikTok in America, in American VPNs, in American internet. You will not be able to do it. So this is really interesting. We'll have to keep watching this. There might be some more legal battles that go on from this. But I wonder who would be a buyer. I think there's a lot of companies that would definitely want to buy TikTok, a lot of US tech giants. I'm sure Facebook is making calls if they haven't already. But we'll see if it actually gets sold. That's going to be something that's really, really going to be something to watch, especially with the legal process still kicking off. That's going to be much, much more on that legally. Let's see. So Goldman Sachs is and more banning and reversals and movements. Goldman Sachs is ditching robo-advising. So Goldman Sachs made a big push over the last few years with their new CEO, being the gentleman's name. He was new at the time. He stepped in and he wanted to make a break into consumer banking, meaning if you think of Goldman Sachs, they're typically like high net worth. They only do ultra high net worth when it comes to private wealth management, which is 35 million and above. And they're probably that raised that bar to 40, 45 million and above as wealth has increased over the last couple of years. But they made a push to get into consumer banking, which is regular Joes and Janes, right? Like, well, I wanted to start to get into that business. And so they did stuff like Marcus Goldman Sachs, which is their online savings account. They did stuff like robo advising, but now they're ditching it. They're saying, I don't want to deal with regular people anymore. They didn't want to deal with regular people. And I don't think regular people wanted to deal with Goldman Sachs. If you think of Goldman Sachs, you think of the elite, you think of different things on Wall Street. And it just was a clash that just didn't mix well from the beginning. I thought it would, but it didn't mix well. And so Goldman is pulling out of robo advising. They sold their assets to Betterment. The transfers are expected to happen at the end of June. And it's just a really, Goldman launched Marcus Invest in 2021. It joined a suite of products under their Marcus platform. The goal was to get lower tax bracket people, accounts as low as 1K. But again, Goldman just says it's not worth it. They don't want to. Like a lot of these companies, they have higher asset minimums, higher asset requirements to work with them, right? Because it just doesn't make sense for them on a standpoint of ROI to work with someone that has like $500 or $1,000 or even $20,000 or $30,000 in their account, because it's not enough for them as far as how much their overhead and all the expenses they are pay they have and working with someone that isn't paying them that much. And so that's one thing that you'll see a lot of the larger wealth management and wealth companies. They just have higher minimums and they just don't want to dip into the regular Jane and Joe. And they're raising those minimums even higher just because of the wealth transfer that's happened over the last few years. So that's really interesting. We'll have to keep our eyes on that and what happens going forward. So what else? We saw the TikTok ban. There's a lot of going on. Reading through these stories to see if there's anything that we need to talk about as a collective, as a group. NBA playoffs, for those that are watching, I'm done guessing on who's going to win because I am not doing well. Not doing well in my guesses. Let's get to question of the week. Question of the week. We have a couple of them. First and foremost, what percentage of people of the age of 65 and older are still working? So, what percentage of the people who are 65 to 74 are still working? What percentage of the people 65 to 74 are still working? I'm going to say 30%, 20%. Oh, wow, I'm close. Answer is 26.6. And this is as of 2022 and predicted to be 29.9 by 2032. So a lot more people in that age range working. Makes sense. I mean, one, if you enjoy what you do, like myself, I don't plan to ever stop working. I'll always be doing something. And I love what I'm doing. This business is growing so well that we're going to continue to keep doing this forever and pass this on. And even if you don't love what you do, you're probably going to live longer, so that means you'll have to work longer anyways. So there's more people going to be working, and especially with inflation, and you can imagine what inflation is going to be like, or the price of goods, a basket of goods will be like in 10, 20, 30 years. People are going to have to work longer. Health, wellness is such a big part of our society now, and people are going to definitely live longer for those facts, and we'll stretch the age of longevity a lot more. And so we'll see that. We'll see that a lot more. So interesting tidbit there. Our next question: how many job applications does it take to get at least one interview? I'd say 30, 40, right? 30, 40. Tell me what's going on out there. If you first go see, try again. Answer. Wait, what are the odds of you getting at least one job interview if you submit 1 to 10 applications? So if you submit 1 to 10 applications, what are the odds that you'll get at least one interview? And the answer is 61%. Okay, so submit 1 to 10. Yeah, at least have a 61% chance of getting one interview. So yeah, that makes sense. I wonder if that's number skewed now that the job market's tightened a little bit, what that actually means for job seekers out there. Definitely is a lot tougher than it was a couple years ago because things have shifted in the job market. So we're seeing a lot of that across the board from folks. Again, folks, we thank you for joining. We do this every week. Make sure you like, subscribe, 5-star rate and review. We have a lot of workshops and different things coming up from New Street. New Street Sports Agency is still going strong. We will talk to you all next week.